shout out to Wrong Kind East Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Kali Cree, KALI_KRE. You can find my books, Piru Love Part 1 and 2, on Amazon Books and Kali Cree Publications and Films. Whoop.
You already snow. Right now, I'm in my office. You know what I'm saying? Because I had to do some, I had to do some things today. Hold on a second. Come on, bro. What's up there? Yeah, so salute to everybody. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing this one over here off the jack. So this is a little bit different right here. So mind me on that one. Okay, Abdul Shakur, Nave Bone, Duraco, salute. DJ Shook Brian, salute. You know what I'm saying? I see a lot of heads up in here. That's what's up, man. You know what I'm saying? Abdul Shakur is a fact. Lord Town, salute. You know what I mean? So, that's a fact, Lord Town. You know what I'm saying? Today we got a guest. We got a guest coming up, man. I spoke to this brother before. Very intelligent brother. You know what I'm saying? I got to kick it with him. Me and Brazy was kicking with him, too. Joey Crack 89, salute. Felicia Cortez, salute. Thank you everybody for coming through. I had planned this earlier, but I had a little emergency I had to take care of real quick, you know what I'm saying? And you know, we here. So I'm just waiting on Alex to come through. Salute Wrong Connie's podcast. Let me see where they at. They're not in here yet either. Salute to everybody, basically. There they go. You know what I'm saying? Salute to Ron Connie's podcast. You know what I'm saying? Salute all my peoples out in the West Coast. Salute all my peoples out in the East Coast. You know what I'm saying? You already know we in the building, you heard? You know what I mean? Now, before Alonzo comes on here, because I'm still waiting on him to pop up. Before he comes on here, I just wanted to say real quick, because today's Wednesday, and today's Wednesday, so I figured I was like, yo, let me drop a little law, something on the law real quick. So it's just coincidence that we were talking about people doing hideous and stupid things, right? So I just want to break down assault. For those who don't know, assault is 120.05 in the penal law in New York, in the New York system. When you're charged with assault, they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you assaulted the person. And the three main elements, because there's about 18 of them, but the three main elements is that you cause serious physical injury, and that it's either intentional, reckless, or depraved. You see what I'm saying? So now the prosecutor has to do, he has to prove that the injuries that this person has was done by you. Now, there's only two ways he can do that. Well, actually three. One, camera. Two, if the dude says something. If the person tells on you, if you get caught on camera, or if you tell everybody what you did, basically you're telling yourself. Ron Connie's podcast, he's not in. Where he at? Okay, now he's in. All right. So I just wanted to break that down real quick before Alex gets on, that when you have an assault has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the injuries that the pain came from you. You know what I'm saying? If the person tells on you, that's one. If you get caught on camera, that's two. And if they can link you by DNA evidence, that's what I meant to say, is three. You see what I'm saying? If you go to trial and they find you guilty, you know, it could have been who had the better argument. But when the person says, that's who did this, that, and the third, that you just can't argue that anymore. You see what I'm saying? But without further ado, I don't want to keep them waiting. Let's get Alex Alonzo up here. Cause I gotta brainstorm with him today. Let me see where he at.
Is this live or what? Is this online right now?
Yeah, we live. We
on what platform is this on right now?
This is on the Wildcat channel.
Okay.
Yeah, basically from seeing, cause I was watching you today on Street TV, something like that.
Street TV?
Yeah.
AKA Street Gangs.
That's a fact. So I was watching that and the Gangsters Chronicles. So I was watching how, for example, because I do the same thing on my channel. I was watching how you transcend from, you could go from the hood politics all the way to national news. News, you know what I'm saying? And I was watching a joint just recently with they want to arrest, they put an indictment on the president of Venezuela, you know. But before we get to that, let everybody know who you be, you know, so and let them know where to find you at, because a lot of people know who you are, but for those who don't know, let them know who you be and where to find you at. Because definitely, I recommend they go over there and watch your podcast. Because I definitely got some news from there that I ain't even heard of, that we supposed to know. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah,
the stage is yours, Alex.
Well, basically, people can find me on streetgangs.com, which is the website. I'm currently overhauling that website, by the way. But streetgangs.com is where it all started for me, and it's where it's still at. But the video production that I put out every week is on Street TV. That is the new, that's been the name I've been going by for almost a year and a half. I kind of moved away from the name Street Gangs. I created Street Gangs when I was like 25 years old. I wasn't thinking of the bigger game, and I think the name Street Gangs kind of puts me in a box. So I changed it to Street TV just because it's not always about gangs. There's a lot of other things going on as well. So, but yeah, the podcast, I'm not sure which one you were listening to, but yeah, I just put, if you're watching the one that I just did about the president of Venezuela, that was just a little video that I put on my other channel, my small channel that I got. But I spoke a lot about these topics on the podcast, the Gangster Chronicles, which I don't no longer host that anymore. I did about 50 episodes up until the coronavirus hit, and I haven't done any since. But yeah, that's pretty much where people can find me.
Yeah. So I did see you on the Gangster Chronicles. And you basically had your own style all the time, you know. You was your own, you was your own creation. The way that you interview these people and the questions that you ask, I see that you was very attentive and informative also. You know, the podcast that I saw, so that was one of your smaller ones.
Was it the one with just me by myself?
Yeah, it's just you by yourself. It was about 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's something that I'm doing on my other channel, which is a smaller channel that I have. It's got about like 15,000 subscribers, but On my Street TV channel, I'm pushing about 300,000 subscribers on that one. But I'm putting out different videos on newsworthy topics on the smaller channel. I'm going to start trying to do that like once a week. You know, I've been so busy, I haven't been able to get as many videos out as I want. But on Street TV, I put out stuff, you know, multiple times a week.
I ain't going to lie. That one with the president of Venezuela, even if that's a powerful 5 minutes, yo. Like, because I saw how you did the comparison with Manuel Noriega, you know, and I was like, yo, man, some really goes in. He goes in, you know, because I, to be honest with you, I started after the last conversation, which was a beautiful conversation that we had last time. I said, let me really go, and I spent a couple of hours watching your different episodes that you have, and I saw how you was going in on so many different topics, and it actually gave me a newer vision, you know, to look at. But I wanted to ask you a question. So you're not doing the Gangsters Chronicles no more, is there? Was there a disagreement that fell out with you and the brothers from the Gangster Chronicles that led to you going on your own? Or was it more lucrative to go on your own? Like, what was, you know, I wouldn't say to go like it's an exact 100 detail, but like, yeah. what would you say in a nutshell, what's the mitigating factor of why you left?
My co-hosts on the show, Reggie Wright Jr. and James McDonald, aka Mob James, I got no problem with them brothers. I still talk to those brothers. Reggie Wright Jr. is in prison right now, about to get out any day now. And James McDonald, Mob James, he's still holding down the show. I just had some issues with the producer of the show, Norman Steele. And it's a long story, really, but you know, COVID pretty much ended my tenure on the show. But we had issues before COVID hit. Norman and I, we bumped heads a few times. There was a couple of times that I was going to quit before, and I just think maybe he got tired of me. And during the whole COVID break, one of the issues during the COVID break, I didn't want to do the Zoom like what we're doing right now on this StreamYard. Yeah. Although the way you got this set up, it looks good. But the way that Norman Steele had his thing set up, I didn't like the way it looked. He had the screens designed like an iPhone, and the quality of it wasn't good. And I was just like, I'd rather wait till the studio opens back up than to do it through the Zoom, through the webcam. It's just something that I never really got into doing. Even on my own platform, there's people that always want to do interviews with me that aren't in LA. I'd rather get on a plane and fly to you and shoot you with three cameras than to do it through a webcam. So I think maybe he felt a certain kind of way that I didn't want to do it. And then when the studio opened up, the brother didn't call me up, and it was a wrap ever since then. He didn't want to call me, I didn't want to call him, and that's cool. You know, I don't think he valued what I brought to the show. I really don't even think he respected me for the work that I brought. And that was that. I have no problem with, I just spoke to James like 2 days ago. Reggie Wright just called me from prison a couple of days ago, and basically they telling me to come back, but it ain't gonna happen.
I see. But so let me ask you something. So you, how long you been doing this for?
Well, shoot, I've been doing my research for many years, over 20 years. I started my first website in 1995. I created my first website when I was a college student over at the University of Southern California. And then I transitioned that website into streetgangs.com in 1998. So what is that? That's 25 years ago, 22 years ago. I was messing around with this online website, web design, and all of that. You know, and then in terms of filmmaking and producing and shooting interviews and doing documentaries, that goes back a good 20 years too. I did my first documentary in 1999 that aired on PBS, produced by Robert Stack. So that was 21 years ago. I worked on Clee Sloan Bones' documentary, Bastards of the Party, back in 96, 97, 98.
Bastards of the Party, I remember
that. Yeah, Bastards of the Party, directed by Clee Sloan Bone. So in terms of picking up a camera and shooting documentaries, man, that's 20 plus years in the game. And even you look at, I have one of my oldest YouTube videos was shot in 1998. And then the same guy that I shot in 1998, I found him in 2018 and did a 20 years later with that dude. And the 1998 interview I did with him, Curtis Kelly is his name, got over like 1.5 million views. And it was just like a 5 or 6 minute interview I did in Watts. So yeah, man, I've been doing this in various forms, whether it's the web, whether it's doing interviews, shooting videos, documentaries. It's 20 plus years in the game.
For those that don't know, can you give them like a little bit of synopsis of some of the people that you have interviewed that I know a lot of people know a lot of these dudes that you've interviewed. Watch.
Oh, man. Shoot, right off the top of my head, we'll throw in T. Rogers. I got T. Rogers, who's the founder of the Black Peace Stones in Los Angeles, not Chicago, but in Los Angeles. I interviewed Kilroy, Ernest Roy Ball, who was one of the co-founders of the Mexican Mafia prison gang in California, which was a really, really difficult interview to get. And it's very rare that you get a Mexican Mafia member, former member, to even speak. I believe I did that in 2013. That's an interview that went over, I believe I hit over a million views on that one. So yeah, that's Kilroy. I got short little interviews with various people like Lil Wayne, Kobe Bryant. I got a Kobe Bryant clip that I shot when after he won his fourth ring. So that would have been 2009. That's on the channel. A bunch of guys from the streets of LA, from J-Rock, who's a well-known rapper now, to Bosco, who's Bosco's like a comedian to me, because every time he says something, you know, he got you laughing. I believe I have the first interview that Bosco ever gave. That was like 8 years ago. So, I mean, I would just invite anyone just to go to the channel, Street TV, click on the playlist, and you'll see so many interviews that I've done over the years. I did an interview of the first Crips ever to go to prison for murder. The Robert Ballou murder in Los Angeles back in 1972. Interviewed those two brothers. That Judson Baycott and Bobby Creer. Rest in peace, Bobby Creer. He just passed last December. But man, it's just too many interviews to name, man. You know, just go to the channel and peruse, man. There's at least 1,000 clips on my channel.
Yeah, wow. That's impressive, man. Like I said, I was doing my research. I definitely was doing my research. Now, and it seems like the same path I'm going in at this point. But when you transitioned from, you know, from, like you say, from the street to the more, because there's a difference when you're interviewing a gang member, and when you're able to go and say, they just put out an indictment on this president of Venezuela, and you. So, when did you transition to that, to start going into the more meaty news? And you know, not you know, the people in the hood, of course, you got to give them they do all the survival and everything they had to go through. But I'm talking about from a bigger perspective. You know, like, when did you transition into that, from going from doing the usual, the street chronicles and the, you know, stuff with the street?
I think I've always had that balance. I've always looked beyond just the guys in the streets and always wanted to be able to talk about other issues, whether it's the president of Venezuela getting indicted or what's going on in our justice system. Because another thing that I do is I consult with criminal defense attorneys here in Los Angeles and really around wherever, around the country. But most of my consultation work is based here in LA. And, you know, I'm always in the courts. I'm always working on a case. I'm always assisting a defense attorney on how to strategize a particular case. So it's given me a little bit of education and background and a little understanding to be able to converse on matters that's beyond just the guy from the streets or interviewing someone like Nipsey Hussle, for example, which is someone I forgot to mention. You can't forget Nipsey Hussle. I got one of the oldest Nipsey Hussle interviews. I believe I did that in February of 2009. So that was 11 years ago. But yeah, it's a balance that I've always had, and all the conversations that I've had with my father throughout the years has given me that ability, because my dad grew up in the streets of New York City. But
we were talking about that.
Yeah, my dad grew up in the streets, but also my dad was, you know, he was an intellectual as well. So to have a father that knew the streets very well, but was also an intellect, provided me with that background. And I think it's one of the reasons why I was able to succeed when I got to college, when I went to college and grad school.
Got you. Okay. Yeah, because I have the same balance too. And I think it's good to have that balance. It gives you more adaptability. But yo, I ain't gonna lie, man. Because let me tell you something. I was in the feds, and I was with a lot of notorious people myself. You know, when you're in the feds, it's different. When you're in the feds, you see a dude. He came from Russia. Another dude came from you had pirates. They had pirates there. You know, people look at pirates like it's Pirates of the Caribbean. No, it's real pirates. They get on your boat with the guns out, and they probably catch a body or two and then take everything and bounce, you know. So I seen a whole bunch of these type of people over there, and I was saying to my, and you know, I've been around like the Zodiacs and the Amityville Horror guy, you know, DeFeo, Anthony DeFeo, Robert DeFeo, something like that. He was the painter over there. So I know how it is when you speak with these individuals, because these individuals always have a unique story to tell. But that I keep going to it because if I didn't hear from you, I would have never knew about that. They never said nothing about that. I didn't see it on the news or nothing.
Like, hey, we're missing a lot of news because of one, the elections, right? A lot of the news right now is covering the elections, so the upcoming elections. So a lot of news is getting displaced. And then, of course, coronavirus. There's so much news on coronavirus, more news is even getting displaced. So there's so much information out there in these last 6 months that we haven't heard about because of just the coronavirus and the upcoming elections, which most of the media is going to cover. You know, so, and you know, that's what they do. That's where they get their ratings and cover these topics. But you know, I think there's a lot of other stuff out there. Like I'm probably gonna shoot a video tomorrow, and tonight I'm going to look over some of the interesting stories that you may not have heard about, because that's what I want to bring more light to, more attention to, and bring more education to. For example, one of the things I want to talk about are the 10 military bases that the United States government has that are named after Confederate traitors, which is just bizarre to me. There's been a little bit of talk about it. You might have heard it here and there, but you know, to actually have our military bases named after traitors is bizarre, because no other country on the earth would name any of their valued institutions after traitors. And that's what the Confederate soldiers were. The Confederate Army were traitors to the U.S. government. But there are 10 bases out there. In fact, my brother was stationed at one base, the one in North Carolina, Fort Bragg. Fort Bragg was named after a Confederate general who was a trader. So, you know, I try to find interesting topics that kind of touch me, but that don't get a lot of coverage through the rest of the media.
Yeah, no, I see. I mean, when I saw that, I said, damn, you know, here we go again with the Noriega story. You know what I'm saying? When I saw that with, you know, because it was wild, because I was saying that in my head. And then the next thing I saw, boom, you came out and said,
yeah.
And I said, oh, hell no. I said, so that, I sat down, I was eating and everything. I said, hold up. I put it down. I said, hold up. Did he just say Noriega? I said, see, this is what I'll be saying. A lot of things repeat themselves. Some people just don't remember, and most people don't know where to look.
Now, Noriega was in the feds. Did you cross paths with him? He got out in like 2010.
Oh, nah, I wasn't in the feds. I didn't go into the feds until 2012.
Oh, okay. I think he got out around 2010 and then he died. But yeah, he spent like 20 years.
I was with El Chapo, but you couldn't talk to him. You couldn't do nothing with the, you couldn't. He had his own staircase where he went. Like you, and then when he moved, they locked the whole jail down. Like the whole jail, everybody got a lock in. He goes in the elevator, they take him down. You know, he was a nuisance more than anything over there, because when he moves, everybody's shut down. You know, if you're cooking, your food is in the microwave or take it with you. You know what I'm saying? Like El Chapo is moving, security, they got to have all the captains, everybody walk with him when he walked around. It was sick, man. It was sick.
I got an interview with a guy named Cree Cree who was in the feds. He's from Athens Park here in Los Angeles, and he talked about being locked up with John Gotti in Marion, Illinois, in the mid 90s.
Oh yeah, I remember Gotti had gotten into an incident over there in Marion. Yeah.
Cree Cree actually talks about that incident. So
that was in the yard, right? I remember.
I thought it was, it might have been in the bathroom, or I don't remember exactly, but I think it was 1996.
Yes,
in Marion, Illinois.
Yes, it was. I remember the date. I'm not really sure of the where. I know it was somewhere when they let them out and then they got into it. I know you got the meat part of that, so I'm going to let you ride on that one. You know what was crazy, though? I met the man when I was a little kid. He shook my hand because he used to lock down 101st Avenue in Ozone Park. And he used to have 101st Avenue locked down. And they used to bring out all the ice cream trucks. And, you know, I don't know how he used to do it, but he used to get the block locked down where they have those blue things where you can't pass and cars can't go nowhere. And he used to have that whole thing full of ice cream. I met him. I was a little kid. Now his grandson was with me. He was with me. Me, his grandson, John Gotti's grandson, and DMX, the rapper, we was on the same painting crew. You know, that's what we used to do. We did a little bit more than paint. We did a little bit more other maintenance, but we was all in the same crew. And and that old man, you remember the old man that was in the heist that they did the Goodfellas on?
Which one, Paul Sorvino?
Yeah, which one? The one that was in with John Gotti's grandson on that case.
I don't know. John's
grandson, they said that the old man got into it with some dude, and they tried to say that they threw a torch or something and burned the dude's whole car up, and they all took their time. None of them told on nobody, and the old man was with me in MDC, and he was very old, but he had story for days. Cool guy. He said that they played, he was the guy that they played, Robert De Niro, I think, played him.
In which movie?
Goodfellas.
Okay, in Goodfellas, Robert De Niro was Jimmy Conway. He played the Irish dude.
No, this guy was he's Italian. So it probably was one of the other guys. He definitely wasn't the rat dude, because that was his thing. He hated
the rat guy. That would have been Henry Hill. Henry Hill.
He didn't want to hear about no Henry Hill. Yo, if you say anything in that movie, he'll be happy. But when you start talking about that man, yo, he go into a frenzy and he don't stop. He one of them old dudes that think he's about 15 years old. Yeah. God bless. You know what I mean? But I remember him saying that when they gave him 7 years recently, a couple of years ago, he said that was a death sentence. Because he's almost about to die. But he's saying that that's revenge because they never got him for that heist.
Oh, you talking about the Lufthansa heist?
Yeah, the Lufthansa heist. Yeah,
when at the airport before it was JFK, it was Idlewild Airport.
Yes, exactly. That's the old man that was with me in MDC.
Oh,
like I said, he got involved. He was involved in a situation where John got his grandson. You know, it was a road rage type of incident, and they hit him hard. They hit him with 7 years. But to him, those 7 years is a lot because he don't think he has 7 years left to live. So he's like, yo, they gave me 7 years. They freaking killed me today. They gave me the death sentence. That's what he kept saying. He said, they don't see I'm dying. he went off. But
what is he, like 80 years old?
Yeah, he's up there. He's about 80. You know, all the food came to him. He can't go nowhere. You know, he can't climb up the stairs, none of that. But he definitely walks. He walks around all day. He walks around in the circle all day, around the whole unit. You know, that's how he used to get by, just walking around. But he used to always talking about that heist and everything like that. You know, it was real interesting to be with him for a while. I used to walk with him a lot of times. Even though he used to talk my ear off, but he was like, yo, solid.
Yeah, that heist happened when I was a kid. I believe it was in the mid 70s. I remember my family talking about the heist. But that was before JFK Airport.
Oh, they said Sonny Franchise. That's his name. Sonny Franchise.
Sonny Francis, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's who it is. Sonny Francis.
Oh, okay,
Michael Francis' dad. Okay, so it's Sonny Francis.
Yeah, Sonny Francis just died actually at the age of 100. I think he made it to 101 or 102 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah, he just died either earlier, like in January, I think, or yeah, he just died earlier this year. He got out.
Oh, he did?
He got out maybe last year. He was the oldest inmate in the whole BOP.
Yeah, because that's what he was saying. He said, look at me.
So you got to chop it up with Sonny Francisi?
Yeah, he was in there with me. We used to chop it up. Yo, the old man was I'm telling you, he wasn't like no regular old man, though. He wasn't like hunchback and all that. You know, he still used to walk around and everything and he used to tell, he used to tell people how he used to be fist fighting and all that. He'd take it back to what's the people that Jack Dempsey and all that. He just loved talking about all that stuff right there.
I know. I know exactly who you're talking about. He just died, man. And he was well over 100. He made it past 100 years old. So yeah. How long ago was that when you bumped into him?
That was like 2017, 2018.
2018. So he was already like in 2018, he was probably like 90, 99 or he was 99 years old.
He was old, Joe.
Was he able to walk on his own?
Yeah, he was walking. Man, that man used to walk around. I told you he used to walk around.
Did he use a walker? Did he use a walker?
No. No walker. God bless him. No walker. He used to just walk around. He used to walk around. He used to sit there at the table and everything. He was, you know, that was the coolest guy I ever met, man. He was a cool dude.
Oh, man, I would have loved to have met him because he's got so much history. He was the underboss of the Colombo family. He was the underboss.
Oh, yeah, he was something up there. I know that.
Yeah, he's second in command of the Colombo family, so... yeah, but I think your boy, president of Venezuela might end up in a federal prison if Donald Trump gets reelected. If Donald Trump gets reelected, he's probably going to go down there and do the same thing he did to Manuel Noriega and put the president of Venezuela in a federal prison. Probably put him in the same cell that Sonny Francisi was in.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Because I'm going to say this. Do you really think he's going to be able to go in there and get him? I mean, because look, Hugo Chavez, he died of, I think they poisoned him, but they say he died of natural causes. Is that what it was? What he had?
I don't know, but Hugo Chavez wasn't the healthiest dude, and he was getting up there in age, but I don't know. And I know the current president of Venezuela worked under him, Nicolas Maduro. Maybe he has something to do with it. Who knows? I don't know. Because, you know, you can't trust any of these people. You know, the guy you hire to help you could be the guy that takes you out, you know.
Yeah, that's true, too. Man, that's a beautiful metaphor.
But to answer your question, when you got the military might of the United States Army and the United States Marine, you could pretty much go anywhere and get whoever you want. So they already laid the groundwork and indicted him. It's just a matter of now going down there and getting him. And they did it with Manuel Noriega. People said Manuel Noriega, the president of Panama, was untouchable. But they sent 15,000 troops down there and they got him. So if they really want to get this dude, Nicolas Maduro, they'll get him.
Do you think they'll do the same for Assad Shakur?
It's a little more difficult with Cuba because of the tensions between the U.S. and Cuba. You know, the Bay of Pigs, ever since the Bay of Pigs, which was in the early 1960s when the Cuban government killed off a bunch of U.S. infiltrators, the United States pretty much stayed away. They did that. They issued that embargo. And since they issued that embargo, they haven't done anything to. I'm sure they got some CIA spies down there. But they're going to leave Assad Shakur alone because there might be some evidence that she's not as guilty of all the crimes that they say she is, you know. So,
yeah, so
it's a little different with her. There may be some evidence that some of the charges against her were trumped up, whereas it's a solid case against Manuel Noriega and what he was doing. I don't know how solid it is that Nicolas Maduro was doing, but, you know, a lot of these Central American and South American presidents, they all deal a little coke on the side. You know, it's good money, you know, and if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. So
why not? I have the pot, right?
Yeah. And who's the number one consumer of that cocaine? It's the United States. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of these diplomats and these leaders they're just saying to themselves, hey, if we don't send this cocaine to the United States, somebody else is. So why don't we just fulfill this need and make the money off of it?
Got you. Now, not to get off, let me ask you something. So the relationship with you and the brothers over there at the Gangster Chronicles, so y'all all still good. It's just the producer that basically threw it off.
Yeah, it's just the producer. I got no issues with the other two brothers. I talk to them all the time. Both of them have expressed publicly that they want me back on the show. It's just working with that producer. I had issues working with him. I'm like a perfectionist. There's been a few times where certain things weren't edited correctly, certain things weren't done right. And I got upset about him, and he got upset that I got upset. And, you know, we had a couple of arguments about it. And in my opinion, I think he just got tired of me just speaking out on certain issues. I didn't like the way some of the videos were being put on the YouTube. We were doing a podcast, and we were trying to promote the podcast, the audio part of it. And we did understand that there's some value to posting some of the videos to YouTube. But we had agreed that we were just going to post clips, maybe a 5-minute clip, maybe a 10-minute clip, because the whole goal of an audio podcast is to get everybody to go to either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. But then I remember looking at the YouTube channel and the producer was just posting up the whole podcast on YouTube. You know, so there were things, I mean, just countless things that I just disagreed with. And I just think he got to a point where he was just like, you know what? I don't want to deal with Alex anymore. And that was that.
Gotcha. All right. You know, I ain't gonna lie, man. I like what you're doing over there, man. I actually took some lessons from watching you over there because I see the way you transition back and forth. You know, I do the same thing, but you're more steady at it because you've been doing this way longer. So for people who have podcasters or coming up with podcasters, what would be your advice to tell them as far as what type of material, for example, is it good when you have a certain type of content on your channel to, is it good to spread? I believe that when you spread, it makes it, because you get redundant if you're always talking the same thing every day. But if you spread, you become more of an interest. Do you notice that, like, in your fan base, how your fan base used to change from a certain type of fan base, and then you started getting different types of people in your fan base that were, like, more educated when you started to touch on topics that were more up there?
Well, in general, the podcast audience is completely a different demographic in, you know, on average than your audience that'll be on a video platform like YouTube. So you definitely are reaching a whole different group of people, because especially if you stay true to the podcast, meaning you posting on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or iHeart, or wherever audio podcasts are broadcast, you stay to that model, you're going to start tapping into another audience that's separate and different from YouTube or Instagram. Mm. So that's the benefit of it. But if you do a podcast and you have video with that podcast and you put the video on YouTube anyways, you're not going to get those people to come over and listen to the audio. So the whole goal of the audio podcast is to make the people come to, whether it's Spotify or Apple or wherever. But if you put the whole thing on YouTube, they're not going to come. And that's the goal of a podcast, is to get them to come on over to the audio podcast, especially if you're trying to enhance advertising opportunities. There are some podcasters that are so big and successful, it doesn't matter. Like Joe Rogan. It doesn't matter what Joe Rogan does. His audience is so deep. But if you're an up-and-coming podcaster, you're a new podcaster, there's all these little tricks and techniques you got to learn in order to get that podcast with a respectable audience.
Yeah, that's a good word, respectable audience.
Yeah, because there's like literally 800 or 900,000 podcasts out there right now. Mm. So, and there's only going to be 200 podcasts in each category that get ranked. So you're one among almost a million podcasts and you're trying to be in the top 200. Very difficult. It's very difficult. But we did that with the Gangsta Chronicles. We were able to chart top 200, top 100. We were like in the top 80 for a while, you know. The people loved it and the people kept on growing. And, you know, we caught on to something really, really good.
Yeah, and I see you rolled with it for a while, so it was clicking.
It was clicking, and I learned a lot doing those 50 episodes that I'm going to incorporate into this new podcast that I'm going to be working on called One Time the Podcast. I haven't even started it yet, but I'm going to incorporate a lot of these principles that I've learned into that podcast, and within a few weeks, I'm going to have that podcast charting.
Okay. And where's that going to be, on YouTube?
I'm going to try to just limit the YouTube videos on that podcast and just focus on the audio platforms and really get that audience listening. Because I got a big audience on Street TV, and yeah, I could tap into them whenever I post those videos. But I want to tap into the audio podcast audience. And these are people that are in their cars that just want to listen. They got an hour commute, or they're in the gym and they're about to get on that treadmill for about an hour and a half. They're not looking at a video. They got their headphones on and they want to hear something. Or the person that's coming home from a long day's work. Or the person that's on that bike ride. He's going to bike ride for about an hour and a half. That's the audience that I want to tap into.
Got you. Yeah, that's the same way I was looking at it too. Because those are the ones that when they come in, they actually, you know, one thing I've noticed about podcasting is in the chat, you bump into certain people in the chat that are some intelligent individuals where even though you're spitting, when they respond, you're saying to yourself, like, okay. And then you get caught up in conversations. I get caught up in conversations with a lot of the people that be in my chat, you know, because sometimes they know of something that I didn't know. And then me, I'm like a sponge. I like to absorb knowledge as much as I can. So, you know, that's the same reason why when I was watching your podcast, I was like, wow, he touches on a lot of topics that, you know, are very relative, you know, that we need to hear about, because, you know, every day we're going to hear about somebody getting shot. Every day we're going to hear about people protesting, you know, that's the news now. Every day there's a new cure for the COVID, which, by the way, you know what's crazy? When it comes to that, I remember one time I woke up, it was nighttime. I had a fever of 103 degrees. Out of nowhere. So I got on the phone and I got me some of that hydrochloroquine and the Z-Pack, and I took it and gone. But then I'm reading on the hydrochloroquine, and as soon as they saw that a couple of heads was actually, for those that, because I never was diagnosed with any COVID or none of that stuff, but I'm a precautionary type of guy. I'm one of those guys that when you, if I feel a cold coming, even though it's not here yet, I'm already starting to drink the tea. The lemon is going inside. I'm already getting a pack of Halls. I'm starting to fight it before it gets strong. So, you know, I don't know if you did any research on them, but after the hydrochloroquine, then they came out with another one. And then that one was kind of successful too. And then now they got another one that they're coming out with. Do you think that they started patenting those medications, and because they started patenting them, they had to keep switching the medications because of that? Like, you know how the people make a fake Nike Air Force Ones, you know about the stitching, or they got fake everything. You can't. It's an alternate of what it is. You know, instead of some people get a Pitzer instead of getting what they call that shit, Viagra. You see what I'm saying? So everything has this derivative to it. So did you see anything in your research in regards to that? And do you feel something ain't right, or something is funny, how every time there's a medicine that comes out and it starts to work, it starts to get adverse reactions when everybody has it. And then now when that new one comes out, it starts to work. Then now people start getting adverse reactions, and then they go and make another one. And then, so what do you think about that?
Well, I'm not so sure if it really worked in the first place. Now, you took it and then you started to feel better, but
it cleaned me out. I mean, it cleaned me out.
But that happens a lot when they do placebo studies, where they give people a drug and they give half the people the real drug and the other half the fake drug. And the people that took the fake drug, they feel just as good as the people that took the real drug sometimes. That's called the placebo effect. So I don't know if you was experiencing the placebo effect or if it was really doing great miracles to your body. So I don't trust a lot of these studies unless they're peer reviewed. If they go through human trials. There's a guy that you heard of, the MyPillow guy, the guy that has the
yeah,
he, he's involved in some sort of supplement that says cures COVID. But this supplement hasn't went through any testing, hasn't went through any peer reviews. But he said the same thing you said. I take it, I took it, and I feel amazing. But he's on the board of the company, and he's got a lot of money to make if people start to buy it. So, you know, I don't trust a lot of these claims that some of these drugs and medicines are even effective, man. I stick to my herbs. I stick to my grains. I stick to my fruits and vegetables. And I wouldn't take this vaccine if it comes out. I tell you that. I don't even take the flu vaccine.
Yeah, me neither.
I've never taken a flu vaccine in my life.
Because they putting it in you.
And so I'm not going to jump on a COVID vaccine unless I really need it. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Let's get that straight. You know, there's some vaccines that are amazing. There's some vaccines that have eliminated diseases like polio and other things from the past that used to kill us. But this COVID-19 is too new to be jumping on a bandwagon and allowing people to mass inoculate us at, you know, so early in the game. So, and if I've never taken a flu vaccine and the flu's been around for decades, I'm certainly not going to jump on top of a COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We definitely on the same page on that, because I'm not really too enthused about putting that in me. You know, anything, if you got to put it in you and test, that's your testing. That's like you taking a chance. It's like telling you, jump off the building. You know, you're going to land on your legs. You know, there's a chance you're going to live, or there's a chance you might break your legs. Either way, it's doing you dirty. You know what I'm saying? So,
I take my chances. I was in New Orleans when right after Hurricane Katrina hit. I flew out there to cover the damage of Hurricane Katrina. This was in 2005. And when I got out there, they had the military, they had all these police from all over the country. And the water and the environment started to get real dangerous in terms of a health issue, just being in this city that was underwater, you know, for days and days. So they started to tell all the military that was there that they were going to start giving them shots so that they don't get sick. Mm. And the day that everyone started lining up to get shots, I jumped in my rental car and I hid out because I was trapped in New Orleans. Once you got in New Orleans, you couldn't leave or come if you were a civilian. And I ended up staying there for about 6 or 7 days. And I didn't want to try to leave each day because it'd be impossible to get back in. So I just hid out when they started giving out them shots, because I don't know what the government was giving those soldiers. And unfortunately, all the soldiers that were there, they have to take the shot because that's their job. You know, if the government says, all right, soldiers, line up and take this shot, you have no choice but to take that shot. But since I was a civilian, I just hid in the bushes for a few hours and continued to do my journalist work while I was out there.
He gave him the gingerbread, man. He said, catch me if you can. Yeah.
And there was these rumors that were going on in New Orleans that dogs were dying from drinking the water, and that if you touched the water, you were going to get sick. And it was all kind of crazy rumors going around during Hurricane Katrina that people were just dropping dead from the water. I didn't witness any of that. I was there for 6 days. It was pretty hectic. It was pretty, you know, there was some hygiene issues. Definitely. There was no running water. There was no electricity, but people weren't dropping dead left and right.
Yeah, it's good to know that. Cause yeah, they had that highlighted. Like you go in the water over there, you might have to come out like the Walking Dead, you
know? Yeah. That was a real rumor. And, you know, take it from someone that was there. I was there. I got 9 hours of videotape footage. I got thousands of photographs that I shot. I had a great time covering New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina, but I stayed as far away as of those shots that they was giving out.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you on that, because I don't want them putting that in me.
I just don't know what it is, you know? I just don't know what it is. And when I grew up as a kid, I believe in the late 70s, they gave out like 9 shots to the kids when you were, you know, going to public school, you know, the tetanus shot, polio shot. I think they gave out 9 shots. Today, as a kid, I think you're getting over 20 shots. So they've doubled the vaccine shots, you know, from the in the last 30 years. And I don't even know why they doubled them. I don't know what's in some of these shots. But yeah, it's you got to do your research on some of these shots, if, especially if you have kids, you know, because the next generation of kids are going to get even more shots.
Man, shots. Sheesh. That's a lot of shots, bro. They stabbing people up. They jigging everybody up just to give them oh, hell no. Nah, man. Can't do that.
I think a couple of the shots are pretty good. I think they got a rabies shot. I know that tetanus shot. The tetanus shot lasts for about 10 years. I think the vaccine completely eradicated polio. You know, people used to die from polio. Now you don't ever hear, when's the last time one of your friends got polio? You know, nobody gets polio anymore.
I never saw nobody get polio or the mumps.
Yeah, but if you look at like old footage of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the president from the 40s, he had polio.
Oh yeah, yeah, I did a thing on him because he still got his train down there in the underground tunnels.
And he had a walker, and they would always, when the old footage of him, you couldn't see his walker. They always made him look strong, but he was weak, physically weak.
That's why he had that train, because he was so weak sometimes to get to the car.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to be in the car that long. So they made sure they had a train that went through the whole New York City, went down Manhattan. And that's how they used to bring him from place to place. And the thing is armored. It's armored, bulletproof, and all that. I don't know if you've seen it. I had it. It's in one of my videos. I did a video on it, on his train. And I had to talk about him, too, of course, and the polio and everything. You know, but I definitely did research on that, too. Well, it's what? It's 11:22. Okay, so I'm about to cut it because I gotta get about this office soon. I've been in this office for I'm getting what's it called that? Claustrophobia. But because I be in here in the daytime too. I just did, you know, I had to come back. But what message would you like to leave the people with? Because one thing we did in this interview is we learned a lot. We spoke about a lot. We learned a lot. And for those that are trying to build their channels and stuff like that, they actually heard when you was talking about, you know, transitions and everything. So what advice would you give to those? First of all, have you noticed the way the internet is today? Because I noticed a big difference the way the internet has evolved now. Because now the internet is a little bit more crazier. It's more radical than it was before. Because internet was really more information. But now it's radicalized. So now it's a little bit more where you're getting all the...
Wait, you just blacked out for a second.
Oh, you blacked out?
No, you did, I think.
No, I'm here. There you go. Okay.
I didn't hear you for about 5 seconds.
Oh, I was just saying, what do you, you know, do you feel that the internet is a little bit more radicalized now?
I think that the apps that are real popular right now, such as Instagram, Twitter, and also like the comments that are readily accessible on YouTube. I think that's the radical nature of the internet that's more visibly apparent. But in the 1990s, there was that element on the internet, but they were more in like message boards or in these chat communities. You know, you don't really hear about those anymore, chat communities or message boards. And it was kind of like the same thing that we're seeing now. But in order, back then, you had to go into a message board. You had to go into a digital space that was kind of private and then see all this radical conversation. But today it's just all posted out on these apps like Instagram and Twitter. You don't have to go anywhere. It just pops up on, it'll just pop up on your phone, right? It'll just show up any moment on your phone. So I just think that that nature, that radical nature that you're talking about, is just more visibly apparent. But it was there. It was there in 1996, 97, 98 when I was first surfing the internet. But now it's just easier to find.
Yeah, because now it's more out there.
Yeah, it's way out there. It's way out there. And also, it's the phone, too. It's the cell phone technology that makes it more readily available and way out there. Because when I was on the internet in 96, let me show you the cell phone I had in 96 real quick. Okay, so this is a smartphone, right? And this makes everything so available that's on the computer, that's on the internet. But this is what I was rocking with in 96. This is a Motorola Flip.
Oh.
This is 1996 cell phone technology, and this was the best phone out in 1995, 96. So the internet was out when this phone came out, but there was no relationship between the cell phone and the internet back then, you know, whereas today the smartphone and the internet are tied together. So that's also made a big difference.
Got you.
I saved it, man.
Man, I can't believe you got that, man. That would have been the Junkyard Dogs joint.
I mean, I have so many treasures that I saved from my past. Check out this antenna right here. You had to pull that up.
That's the Motorola joint, right?
This was the baddest phone out in 96, right here.
Yeah, that's a big boy.
Yeah.
Big boy right there. Look at the change. You see how it went from that big copying machine joint to now you got the little small slick joint.
And you couldn't text on this either. There was no texting. It was just phone calls. That was it.
Yeah, that's all it took was phone calls, right?
Yep. So there was no relationship between the cell phones and the internet until you get to the, I guess you can say, when T-Mobile came out with the Sidekick. That would have been like 2004.
Yes, I remember that.
2004, you can get email, and then the BlackBerry also, and then you know what, the Palm Pilot was able to get email. So early 2000s, we started to see this shift of where the cell phone and the internet were slowly getting tied in together. It started off with email, and then texting, and then once the iPhone comes out with the I think 2007. You got the full internet in your hand in 2007. You got web browsing, you know, and yeah, apps started coming out. So that really changed the game.
Yeah, that was the iPhones. iPhone was the first one to do that.
No, there was a phone before the iPhone called the Wing. The Wing was it was made by a company called HTC. It came out about 1 year before the iPhone came out, the Wing. But the difference with the iPhone is that they had an app store. So the app store was more powerful and they had more things to do.
Yeah, get all your stuff right from the app store.
Yeah, they had a bunch of apps you can download for free, and then people started to develop apps. But the iPhone isn't the first phone that can go on the internet. The BlackBerry had a web browser also before the iPhone came out. And I don't know what kind of business moves the BlackBerry made, but the BlackBerry should have been the biggest phone out, but they made some business mistakes along the way. Yes. And they didn't adapt, and you know, Apple saw the vision and they went running with it.
Okay, that's what's up. I mean,
and Motorola, whatever happened to Motorola? They were the first ones in the game, and Motorola I don't even think exists anymore as a cell phone maker.
Nah, because the last one was the Razr, right?
The Motorola Razr, they had a few other ones, but Motorola still does tech communication stuff. You know, they do headsets and other things, but man.
We got these. See? We got these. These are Motorola.
Yeah, they're still pretty popular for different communications, walkie-talkies, ham radios. But they must have made some bad business moves because they were making they were the number one cell maker in the mid-90s. You know?
Yeah. So, everybody was trying to get those.
Yeah, the Motorola Flip.
That's a fact. I have one of those.
And then they came out with a black one that was thinner than this called the StarTech. The StarTech Motorola Flip. It was a really nice phone. But, you know, they fell off and allowed Samsung and Apple to take over.
Oh, that's what, yeah, because a lot of mergers happened. I remember all the mergers.
But some of these companies just make bad moves. Like, for example, Kodak. Kodak didn't believe in digital photography. They were still saying, oh, we make millions of dollars selling film. They did not see the day when people were going to stop buying film for their cameras and just go completely DSLR. You know, these cameras don't use film. And Kodak didn't believe that we were going to have cameras that did not use film and outsell the cameras that used film. And Kodak made huge mistakes to where they had to file bankruptcy.
Yeah, I'll be passing the building all the time. I'm not too far from the building now. I'm about a couple blocks down. But yeah, you know, I know they're trying to do something with the building right now as we speak. But yeah, man, before this phone cuts off and it cuts us off, I just want to say, man, I appreciate you coming through. It's good to know that you and everybody in the Gangster Chronicles, y'all still good.
We're still good.
It's a production. It was a production problem. It's good to know that when we want to get some reasonable insight and some, I would say, insight that's needed. You know, your podcast always got it, man. Let them know where to find you at one more time, in case people just tuned in or tuned in late and didn't hear you before. Let them know where to find you at. You know, so that they know how to get ascertain this knowledge, the same knowledge that I'll be getting myself.
They could just find me at streetgangs.com, and I'm also on all social media platforms at AlexAlonso101, AlexAlonso101, and on YouTube you could just hit up Street TV, and you can see my latest episode. I think I dropped 4 episodes this morning. Go check that out. Skip Townsend. Sonny Boy from Burbank, Melina Abdullah from Black Lives Matter, and another one that I can't remember. So, yeah, go check that out, Street TV on YouTube.
Okay. You know, we definitely got to do this again, man, because I like chopping it up with you. You know, this is the type of chopping up that I like to do, you know what I'm saying, where we actually learning from each other. It's the best relationship to have where people learn from each other and grow than when people just look at what people have and what they don't have. You know, I think that those are the things that are the leftist type of mentality, you know. I'm very appreciative to have you up here today. And salute to Ron Connie's podcast also, you know, and salute to Brazy K. And all the people in the chat, all the Spartans, all the Billies, everybody that's here, I appreciate you guys coming through. You know, man, we had another great one today with Alex Alonso. And Alex Alonso, I appreciate you having come through. And
where's Mickey Slick, man?
My link?
No, my where's link? Mitchie Slick? Wrong kind.
Oh, that's right. Mitchie Slick. Salute Mitchie Slick, man. I almost forgot.
Where's he at?
He's not. He didn't come in. Nah, he wasn't able to come in today.
Okay.
He wasn't able to come in, but I always keep his banner up because, you know, that's people's right there, man. You know, me, I'm a spread the love type of guy. You know, I'm not a...
see him tomorrow at the premiere.
Yes, you will see him tomorrow at the premiere, I believe. Yeah. That's going to be a good one there. So, all right. At any time, man, you know, we definitely got to chop it up one day. I definitely would like to, if you don't mind, I definitely would like to do a thing called 20 minutes, make it or break it. You know, it's where we talk on three topics and you know, like it's not like a presidential debate, but it's the insights that we have on the topics and, you know, our resolution towards them. You know, I call it 20 minutes, make it or break it. You know,
okay.
We need to do that one day. Cause I would love to do it with you. Cause I know your brain is full of knowledge. You know what I'm saying? So it would be great to do that. You know, I know the people would love to see that. You know what I'm saying? We don't do it that often. I did it, I think, one time already or twice. But you know, make it or break it is just is one of those good things. It's like when you're on them shows and you hear that song that's giving you the time limit, letting you know you got this much enough time to answer the question and break it down. It's like one of them joints. So
okay,
back on here again, man. But we're gonna talk. We definitely gonna talk on that one.
All right, keep me posted.
I got you, man. I appreciate you, bro.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, bro. Take it easy. Thank you. Yeah, salute to everybody in the building, man.